WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Cher is back with her first new album in 5 years, and many people are wondering where she's been. Well, she was knocked out for several years by chronic fatigue syndrome, but she made her film comeback this year with Faithful and has directed a short film that will air on HBO in the fall. Meanwhile, the old Sonny and Cher comedy hour is being rerun on Nickelodeon's TV Land. Ever since the Sonny and Cher era, Cher has alternately been the subject of critical praise and derision. She won an Oscar for her role in Moonstruck and received much critical praise for her roles in Mask, Silkwood, and Mermaids. Yet for the past few years, she's been the punchline of jokes about infomercials, younger men, and plastic surgery. Before we talk, let's hear a track from her new CD, It's a Man's World. This is the single, One by One. That's One by One from Cher's new CD. And Cher, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks.
Why did you decide to do another record? It's your first in, what, 5 years?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it was about time.
Do you think your voice has changed since your previous recordings? It seems deeper to me.
Oh, I don't think so. I actually think, if anything, I'm singing a lot higher than I normally sing, you know, and using a different vocal sound and on some of the songs, but I don't know if it's deeper. I don't know if it could get any deeper.
Have you taken voice lessons?
Yeah, I've been actually taking lessons, since I got back into the music industry, which was about 10 years ago, I guess. Maybe a little bit more than 10 years ago. No, it was actually 10 years ago. So just because I had been acting for such a long time and I hadn't sung at all, and, you know, you're vocal cords are a muscle. If you don't use them, they don't work for you. So I kind of got into that, and I think that I've made a lot of progress in, I mean, I still sound like myself, but I have a little bit wider range, and I think I'm a better singer.
Cher, you're 50 now. I wonder how that compares with what you had expected 50 to be.
Oh, I never thought what 50 might be. I mean, in my eyes, 50 is old. You know, if someone says someone is 50, I think, my mom.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. I was doing an interview the other day, and this girl said, "So, what do you like to do in your free time?" And I said, "Oh, I like to read, and I like to go to the movies, and I like to go to museums, and I like to ride my Harley." And she just kind of looked at me, and she said, "You have a motorcycle?" And I said, "Yeah." So I imagine that 50 is now going to have to take on a little bit of a new form.
I wonder where being sexy will fit into being in your 50s. I mean, that's always been such a part of your image. And, you know, like in your 50s, do you want to do the whole exposed navel thing, or, you know, the body stocking, the body stocking gown?
Oh, I don't know. I won't shy away from it because I'm 50, you know. I'll just continue to do, you know, I'll just continue to do basically what I think is right at the moment. You know, I remember my mother cut her hair all off once, and I asked her why, and she said, because after 35 or something, you know, women shouldn't have long hair, because that's, you know, it was for young people, and I always thought that was a very strange thing. you know, and I still don't get it. So I think that you have to do what it is that you feel right about doing.
You know, glamour has always been a part of your image, though sometimes it's ironic, sometimes it's not. And you've also given a lot of, like, you know, beauty tips and health tips and so on in another part of your career. I wonder what your self-image was when you were young, in high school.
Well, it wasn't very good because I didn't really like high school. I was dyslexic, and so it was really difficult. School, the whole of school was really hard for me, and I also found that school is not there so much to teach people. It's kind of there to just ground down your edges so that you fit in the square hole. So you're a square peg or a round peg in a round hole. I was kind of a square peg in a round hole. I didn't take smoothing down very easily. And my mom always encouraged me to be myself, and so I was. So school for me was just, it wasn't a very interesting time.
Did you think of yourself as attractive or unattractive in high school?
Well, I thought of myself as pretty unattractive.
Did that matter a lot?
Yeah. I mean, in school, you know, I wasn't perky, and I wasn't blonde, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't like the role model of the time was supposed to be. So it was, you know, it wasn't a nurturing kind of time experience for me, high school.
I wonder if your self-image changed or changed radically after you become famous, and also after you had plastic surgery and your some of your face literally changed. Does your inner image of yourself change with that?
Well, I think my image of myself changed when I started doing something that I got acclaim for, because I was the same person, but instead of having people kind of look down at you for being the person, the moment you're famous, they look up to you for the same things that they were looking down on you for about 15 minutes ago, you know? So, and I don't think my ideal of myself has changed so much since I had my nose done and since I had my teeth done, because the reason I changed them was more for film than for my own personal feelings, because I was really content my whole life on television to have the same nose and the same teeth. I didn't like it very much when I was doing movies, because it was hard to photograph, and unless I had a certain light, my teeth, you know, kind of disappeared. So no, I don't think my self-image changed at all.
What was the money situation in the house when you were growing up?
It was rough. I mean, you know, my mother had two children that she took care of by herself with no help from our fathers, and so it was tight sometimes. It was tight a lot of the times.
As you said from our fathers, and your mother was married several times.
Yeah.
Did you know your father well?
I met my father when I was 11.
Hmm. Did you spend much time with him?
Not really. I mean, I didn't care for him that much.
Why not?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess he didn't have the, you know, there's some sort of a security in being someone's parent and growing up with them, because you forgive people things that, you know, qualities that they have that you are not especially fond of. But when you don't really know the person and they just come in as a person, you don't forgive them that much, because, you know, they haven't done anything really to deserve it. So my father wasn't really the kind of person I would want to hang out with or that I would respect very much. So I just didn't.
Now, I know you quit school at the age of 16 and left home. What did you hope for when you made that decision?
Well, I mean, school was not something that I thought I was going to have a future in. And when I left home, I wasn't hoping for anything. I was kind of just tired of, I wanted to be out on my own, and I wanted to, you know, do what I wanted to do.
And what was it that you wanted to do?
I don't know. I mean, I guess what I did.
You started your career with Sonny Bono, who you were married to for several years. Can I ask how you met and started working together?
Well, I met Sonny in... I actually met Sonny in a restaurant, and he liked my girlfriend, and we just kind of became friends. And one time he took me to the session, and I really enjoyed, you know, watching the music Phil Spector was recording, and it just kind of evolved. It was a strange evolution. I mean, we really weren't, we were just kind of friends in the beginning for a really long time, actually.
How did the idea of a duo come about, Sonny and Cher?
Because Sonny wanted to produce me, but I was really too chicken to do it, so he did it with me so that I would actually, I mean, I could sing in front of the microphone. I just was a little bit nervous about going in front of a crowd, so it just became Sonny and Cher kind of by default.
Now, tell me about how in the early days of Sonny and Cher you got a sense of who you were together as an act.
I don't exactly understand the question.
What your image would be together, what kinds of songs you would do together.
Well, our image kind of came by accidentally, because we dressed the way that we dressed at home. And when we first started out, we tried, you know, Sonny wore a suit and I wore a dress. But we were very kind of bizarre dressers, you know, in our everyday lives. And then one time we were doing this gig in San Francisco and our suitcase didn't come, so we just went on in our regular clothes, and people seemed to, you know, kids seemed to really think it was cool. Adults didn't like it very much, so we knew we were onto something.
And then did you make that even more exaggerated once it started to catch on, to try to be more outlandish?
No, it was easy. Both Sonny and I, you know, Sonny was outlandish when I met him, and I was too, so we kind of fueled the fire. I mean, we really enjoyed what we were doing, and we thought we looked great. You know, we thought we were really cool.
My guest is Cher, and she has a new CD called It's a Man's World. How did comedy start to be a part of your act together? You know, ribbing each other.
Well, because when we left concerts and we started playing nightclubs, it was very tough for us. So we used to just talk to each other, and there wouldn't be very many people at our shows sometimes. So we just started talking to each other, and the band started laughing. And so it was at first kind of an amusement for ourselves, you know, and then it started to work its way into the show. And we were really good at it, you know. I mean, if I met Sonny today, we could sit down and do, you know, 20 minutes without batting an eyelash, just because we know each other so well.
On your TV show together, your clothes were designed by Bob Mackie. And he once said to Ms. Magazine, "Cher wore all my clothes like they were a pair of jeans. If someone else had been wearing those gowns, it wouldn't have been the same. No one else has Cher's ease." Does that ring true to you?
Yeah. Because I'm not embarrassed by anything that I wear, and I feel good in clothes, and I don't think it's like, for me, it's about amusement. It's not about necessarily a statement.
Right, you know? right.
It's whimsy. In a strange way, it's like putting your makeup on, you know, it's something that you do to kind of express what you feel like on that day.
Because your professional career was so intertwined with Sonny Bono's career, did you fear that when you separated that your career would flounder, that you'd be in professional trouble on your own?
Yeah, well, I was for a while. I mean, not immediately. Actually, it flourished when I first went on and did the Cher show. And then it kind of floundered. I wasn't really good at... I lost interest rather quickly in the Cher show, I must say. And it was really hard work. I mean, I was always used to being part of a team, and it was difficult. Every week I spent every, you know, waking hour doing it, and it was just kind of difficult. Plus, when I left for the end of the season, I was in the top 10, and when I came back, I was the last rated show because of something called the $6 Million Man. So it was really difficult trying to reach back my audience. And I think that I got kind of turned off by that.
My guest is Cher. She has a new CD called One by One. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Cher. Your film career started with the 1982 movie Come Back to the Five and Dime. And that was directed by Robert Altman. How did he cast you in the movie?
Well, originally he wanted me to play the part of Karen's part, the part of Joe.
Karen Black.
Yeah, and I really didn't want to do that part. And so I told him I didn't really want to do that. And I think he was kind of shocked. And he said, well, then what part do you want to do? And I said, I want to be Sissy. And he said, well, what makes you think that I should let you? And I said, well, I don't know. You don't have to, but that's what I want to do. And so that's what I ended up doing.
So did you like acting?
Yeah. I thought it was really fun. It was easy.
Do you think of yourself as a natural as opposed to someone who's trained a lot?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I literally have no training. I mean, I don't know about, you know, I don't have technique, which I'm sure in some ways would be beneficial. I just never learned it.
In the movie Mask, you played the mother of a teenage boy whose face was very deformed as a result of a bone disease. What did you enjoy most about that part?
Well, I guess working with Eric and the relationship. Yeah, the relationship between the two characters. It was really a great relationship, and that's my favorite part that I've ever done. So it was just, I didn't enjoy the filming of it very much, and I hated working with the director, but the relationship between Eric and I was so good that even Peter couldn't screw it up.
The director was Peter Bogdanovich. I understand there were things that you didn't see eye to eye with him on. What was the difference between what he wanted you to do in the role and what you wanted to do?
I think that the first thing is that he didn't really like the character that much that I was playing. He likes his women a lot more subservient, and also he didn't like when we were with the bikers and the actors that were playing bikers, he kind of has a disdain for those people. He didn't find the poetry in them, and so he wasn't very honest. And so he tried to gimmick them up sometimes, or he just didn't face them square on. And I have a real problem with dishonesty in people.
So did you win in the acting arguments?
Yeah.
Was it hard for you to keep standing up for yourself since you were still relatively new in movies?
I was completely new, and yeah, except finally Eric told me, he said, you know, Ma, you're doing it wrong. He said, don't argue with him, just say yes and then do what you want because he never pays any attention. And so finally I learned that from Eric, because the truth was, when I didn't argue and I just said okay and I went in and did what I wanted, he never noticed.
That's interesting. So Eric called you Ma?
Yeah, he still does.
Oh, that's great. Now, what about Moonstruck, that you got an Academy Award for your role in Moonstruck? Tell me something about your experiences making that movie.
You know, that movie just made itself. It was so easy. I never actually felt like I was working for a day. You know, I loved the people that I was working with, and I loved the story, even though I didn't think anybody was going to go see it. None of us did. So the set was really fun. You know, making a comedy is kind of an easy deal, you know. I mean, making Mask was difficult because I was always in tears or angry or drunk. Making Moonstruck was pretty easy. It was kind of a cinch. Also, I was surrounded by people that were really good, so it really didn't, you know, it wasn't all my responsibility.
It's interesting. Your male co-stars in the movie were Danny Aiello and Nicolas Cage, who have since become very famous and acclaimed, and they weren't very known at all when you made the movie.
No. Actually, I had to quit the movie to get Nick.
What do you mean?
Because they didn't want him, and I wanted him, and finally I said, all right, I quit. If you're not going to use Nicky, then I'm not going to do the film. I quit for 2 days.
Did you think you had enough clout to make that work? Or did you expect you'd actually finally lose the part?
I actually didn't care.
Well, you were certainly right about Nicolas Cage. What made you realize he was that good?
Because I had seen him in Peggy Sue, and I thought anybody that would make themselves so out on a limb and could act so crazy and could go as far as Nicky went. I mean, Nicky is brilliant because he will go as far as he has to go, and most actors will kind of guard themselves and they won't go all the way because, you know, you might find yourself in a weird territory. You might find yourself looking foolish, and Nicky hasn't got those kind of fears.
Did he know that you put your job on the line for
yeah.
him?
Uh-huh. We actually talked about it the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's doing good.
Yeah. He's really talented.
That Cher, she has a new CD called One by One. We'll talk a bit more in the second half of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of our interview with Cher. She has a new CD, her first in 5 years, called One by One. You know, in 1988, Ms. Magazine praised you for daring to be yourself, and the editors wrote, "Beneath the glitz lives an authentic feminist." Is that the way you would describe yourself?
No. I think authentic is a good one, and after that, I don't think anything follows. I mean, whatever I am authentic, but I believe in rights for women, you know. I just believe that it should just come naturally, you know, and the label I dislike about feminist is that it seems not to have any sense of humor about it, and I'm kind of all about having a sense of humor about yourself.
I want to play something else from your new CD, and this is the James Brown song, It's a Man's World. How did you decide to do this?
Well, I wanted to do a song that was really associated with men, and that's kind of the definitive song that's associated with a man.
And
I just think that singing a song that's from a man's point of view, when you sing it as a woman, it takes on a different meaning.
And what meaning did you want this to take on?
Well, I think in James Brown's, it was very, it was a very positive song about it being a man's world. And I kind of think in my version of it, it's not that positive.
Right. This is Cher from her new CD, It's a Man's World.
Man, think about a little bitty baby girl and a baby boy. Man makes them happy, 'cause a man makes them toys. And after man make everything he can, you know man makes money to buy from other men. Oh, this is a man's world, but it would be nothing.
That's Cher from her new CD, It's a Man's World. You started your career as a performer with Sonny Bono. I'm wondering what you think of his career now as a congressman.
I don't know. It's a job.
His politics, do you agree with him?
I'm not a Republican.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have a question about your daughter together, Chastity. She came out a few years ago. What was your first reaction when she told you that she was a lesbian?
Well, I didn't react really well to it, I must say. For all of my liberal views, I thought I would react better, but initially I was really upset. I mean, I was upset for about 3 days, I must say. And then I kind of analyzed the whole situation and got down to what was really bothering me, And it was fine. I mean, Chas and I have a great relationship, and I'm really happy. I'm really happy that she did come out, because it makes her life so much better, and she's so much happier doing what she's doing. And so, therefore, I'm really happy for her. You know, I see her feeling really good about herself, and I see her really blossoming, and it makes me feel really good about her.
You've commented before that it's interesting to watch your children, because you grew up kind of poor and they grew up kind of rich, and they have different values than you do about certain things. Where are the differences most noticeable?
I think that, you know, money isn't such a huge thing to them because it was always available, you know? And so they, you know, ran around in ratty clothes. Rich kids don't have the need. If you are rich, you don't have the need to go around looking at or proving it or whatever. And they're a lot more laid back in their lifestyles. They're not so into lavishness and dressing lavish or whatever. They're kind of more toned down.
Cher, she has a new CD called One by One. This is Fresh Air.